Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, coming from the Upward Sports Studio. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson. Today we're going to talk about surrender, what it looks like, and how we do it. And then I'm going to talk about persuasion and how it applies to our running and our faith. And joining me for those stories and much more is, once again, founder, Run for God founder, Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
It's been good. Did you like the eclipse?
I did, yeah.
I guess we were about 90% or close to that here.
I saw a report on the news after that. It said, do you know what the number one Googled term the night of the eclipse was?
What?
My eyes hurt. It said, how many people put on sunglasses and looked at it? Well, you can't put sunglasses on and look at the sun. So I thought that was pretty interesting. The number one phrase after the eclipse was, my eyes hurt.
It figures. Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. I said, here in North Georgia, we were like 90 or 95%.
Yeah.
And I actually went outside and was walking during the eclipse. I wanted to be walking during it so I could just watch it. And of course, it was really neat how everything just kind of started to get dim. But at the height of the eclipse here, I had the real glasses, and I put those on and looked, and it was just, it looked less than 5% of the sun. I mean, it was a tiny little sliver, but how light it still was.
Yeah.
And I told my pastor, I said, there's a few sermons
for sure
in that on the power of light.
Yeah.
But I mean, because you look, and I mean, it, for all practical purposes, the sun was covered.
Yeah.
But there was still light.
Yeah.
But then go just north of here where it's 100%, and that one little sliver goes over and it gets dark.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was a really, it's a really cool event.
It is.
It said, I think I saw on the news that only 1 in 10,000 people will ever see a full eclipse.
Really?
Yeah.
We saw one, what, 7 years
back
ago
it
here.
Was a, well, we had to go, we went to Benton, Tennessee, about 45 miles north of here to actually get the full eclipse.
Yeah.
But, it's a spiritual experience.
Yeah.
I mean, you really see the power of God when you really sit down and you think about how all that works.
Yeah. Well, you know, the next eclipse is 2 years away in Cairo, Egypt.
That would be pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah. You think? I don't know. Egypt scares me.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff going on in Egypt.
There is. Crazy stuff all over the world.
Pretty much.
You look at some places around here and there's some crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, my pastor drove up to Illinois to watch the eclipse.
Did he really?
So he could get the 100%, yes, and because he's crazy.
Yeah.
And he was the one that told me. And I said, there's crazy people in Egypt. He said, well, there was crazy people in Illinois. I imagine there were. It took him almost 12 hours to get home.
Really?
Yes. That's how many people traveled to that.
Yeah, I bet the interstates were packed.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, so let's talk about if you're listening to this and we sound different, we have some new equipment.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So talk about these mics just a little bit.
These are supposed to be like the best podcast mic you can have. I mean, I did a lot of research and checked it out. And I'll put it this way. Joe Rogan is the number one podcast in the world, to my understanding, and these are the mics that he uses.
So we're going to be the number two podcast here in a few weeks.
Well,
basically,
it just stands to reason.
That's what you told me anyway.
That's right.
Know,
yeah.
So.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, so give us some feedback. You know, do we sound different? You sound the same sitting across the table from me right now. So if we don't sound any better, it's probably not the mic's fault.
More than likely, it's us.
It's probably just Dean and Mitchell.
We had a good post last week from Tony Wetmore.
Yeah.
Tony'd been around the Run for God circles for a long time. And he says, a cautionary tale for my Run for God family. I'm not a big poster here, but I have been a Run for God member since running again in 2014. And Holly would send out Run for God member boxes filled with a shirt, mug, stickers, and devotional books. Ah, the good old days. I found Run for God on a Google search after realizing my running and my faith had to have a connection, and Run for God was the perfect match. Taught a couple of Run for God couch to 5K classes, went through the 5K, 10K, half, and marathon training plans, and in May 2023 completed my first marathon, sub 5 hours, without a single injury or hiccup. Dean and Mitchell's training was perfect. After completing the marathon, I decided to pick it up a notch and start running some PRs. I bought a highly recommended running app program and put the Run for God plans on the shelf. The new running plan did not take into consideration my age or ability. It lumped me into all age groups. And though my speed did get better, 6 minute miles at 66 years old, it broke me by December 2023. Complex medial meniscus tears. Looking back with 2020 vision, I realized that Dean would never teach or train this way. The 1 mile time trials are extremely significant and important to your personal training and plan. You build off your own ability and progress, not someone else's. The plans are built to have little injury and great success. I have learned invaluable information and training in this Run for God program over this past 10 years, and also deepened my faith in the example shown by the leadership at Run for God. So there are a lot of things out there for running plans and apps, but nothing like Run for God. Prayerfully, in a month or so, I'll be back out there running again. This time, I'll keep my eyes fixed on Jesus and run the race He sets out before me. I'm truly blessed to be running this race and life for Him. Thank you, Run for God, for being a part of it. Blessings. And he finishes with 1 Samuel 16:7. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.
You know, it just really means a lot that Tony sent this. Because, I mean, we don't hear a ton of feedback, especially on the training.
Yeah.
But what Tony is saying is dead on. I mean, and as we're preparing, as we're building this new app that we've all kind of been plugged into the past several months, we're looking in the market out there and seeing what else is out there. And, you know, we run across apps quite a bit that will be a couch to 5K in 6 weeks. And, you know, can you do that?
Some
yes.
people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, most people probably could.
Yeah.
Should you do that? No.
Right.
And so, you know, we have people quite a bit that reach out to us and say, hey, can I do this in X weeks? And we say, yes.
Yeah.
But we also throw, because they want us to adjust the training for them, and we won't do that.
Right.
You know, we kind of do it at your own risk, but, mm-hmm. you know, we tend to err on the side of being conservative because this isn't a flash in the pan.
Right.
This, we want people who start running and walking to do it for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's better to err on the side of caution and take it slow. You know, we always talk about the twos, the terrible twos, too much, too fast, too soon. And honestly, a lot of the training out there, they cater to what people are wanting. And yeah. we know that there are a lot of people wanting that. And right. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just simply saying that's not what we do.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that I really liked about this post was just it takes a humble person to write this post.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
You know, here's somebody saying, hey, I thought something and I think I made a mistake, and I just want you guys to know so you don't make that mistake. That's mm-hmm. That takes a big person to do
it
that.
It does, yeah.
And so, man, Tony, we so appreciate your heart mm-hmm. in this, but – I don't know what other plan he was using. I'm sure it's a good plan for somebody.
Sure.
He mentions himself. He's 66 years old, and it is different yeah. for a 66-year-old than it is for somebody who's much younger.
Running 6 minute miles at 66 is that's no small feat.
No, that he is. He is. Yeah, he is running pretty fast. But the main thing is, and he mentions here the 1 mile time trials. The reason we do those is to make sure that the workouts that you're prescribed are done at the right pace,
mm-hmm.
Because that's really important. Because the truth is very often you can run faster than whatever the right pace is.
Right.
You can.
Sure.
But if you do that too much, you eventually break down.
We talked about it. Was it last week or the week before? I was listening to it a few days ago where we were talking about heart rate training and, mm-hmm. and talking about the benefits of heart rate training, at least for new runners, is to keep you where you need to be, mm-hmm. or at least listening to your breathing and watching your heart rate, because you're right. Most people can run faster, but they tend to run faster when they shouldn't be running faster. Right. And then they run too slow when they should be running too
fast. That's right.
When they should be running faster. So
that's a fact.
The variation of intensities in training is the secret behind any training plan.
Yeah.
And that's what we really try to, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right, right. Well, and most people, I mean, if you follow me and really pay attention on Strava, you know this. I don't run fast very often.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. I mean, now, I think people are different. I think there's some people that don't do well unless they do some good strenuous workouts. All I need to do is run every day, mm-hmm. and I'm good.
True.
And so I don't do a ton of hard running, but it's because I know what my body does if I do too much of it.
Yeah.
And I'd rather err on the side of taking it easier than sure. going harder.
Yeah.
Right?
It's better to come into a race healthy and a little undertrained than come into a race overtrained and injured.
Yep, absolutely.
Always.
Absolutely. Now, there is a happy medium, because I think that sometimes there is, because some people are quick to say, I can't do that, when they can, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
So there is a spot in between there. Tony's one of those guys, obviously, who can dig really deep and he has to be pulled back a little bit. There's other people that need to be pushed a little
sure.
harder as well. So you got to find that happy medium.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, our trivia question from last week. Who is the only American male to win the World Cross Country Championships? And, of course, the name is Craig Virgin. I bet there's a ton of people listening to this that have never heard the name Craig Virgin.
I've never heard the name Craig Virgin.
Craig Virgin was just a master. He's still around. Actually, I've talked with him on the phone. Super nice guy. He still owns a company called Front Runner Incorporated. Not the same as Front Runner Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good guy. Just he does a lot of things to try to promote the sport of running. But I'm really surprised that he's not as ubiquitous in the running world as, say, Alberto Salazar. Everybody mm-hmm. knows Alberto Salazar. Everybody knows a lot of these names, but Craig Virgin was as good as any American runner for a time period. Now, the time period was probably only about 3 years long.
Yeah.
He was really, really incredible. But during that time, he won 2 World Cross Country Championships. No other American has ever done that. As a matter of fact, there's only one other American who's ever even been on the podium, and that was Alberto Salazar the year after Virgin won his second one. So, I mean,
so you think Salazar is just more notable because he went on to coach and the controversy kind of around him? And
no, well, I think the biggest thing with Salazar is he won the New York Marathon.
Well, true. Yeah.
He won the Boston Marathon. And I think you win those.
He went on to have a pretty big career.
He did. He did. But he also he won the big races. Craig Virgin, you know, biggest races. He won the World Cross Country Championships, but in America, we don't pay attention to World Cross
yeah.
Country. I mean, even though it's probably one of the toughest races in the world to win. Craig did run a few marathons. He ran 210, I think, at one point. But he just never really got into the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's interesting. Craig Virgin grew up with a congenital problem and had to have surgery as a youngster to get that fixed. He was in constant pain all the time and had to overcome that. And then once he had that surgery, they found out, hey, this guy could run.
Yeah.
And then he had a great career. In high school, he ran 8:40 for the 2 mile in high school at a time when – 1972, he ran 8:40 for the
wow.
2 mile, which is just – I mean, you know, if somebody runs 8:40 for 2 mile today, they're among the top 3 or 4 in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this was back in 1972 before – all the advancements we've had. So he was great. He ran 13:50 in high school for cross country.
Wow.
Matter of fact, his record stood from the early 70s until, a couple of years ago. Josh Methner beat it by less than a second.
Hmm.
So after all those years, there's still really nobody better than Craig Virgin was when he was in high school. So he made three Olympic teams. Of course, he only ran in two of them because we boycotted the 1980 Olympics, and that was one of the ones that he was in. But has had some good success. The most fascinating race was the 1980 World Cross Country Championships. There's a video of it out there, and you can find it, I think, on YouTube. And Craig Virgin, with a half mile to go, is third. And it looks like the gap is insurmountable. And he's running there. There's a guy named Nick Rose that's winning the race from England. And then there's a West German that's running right next to him. And the West German starts to pull away from him as they get closer toward the finish line. And Craig Virgin looks like he's just doing all he can to try to hang on. It just looks like the West German might have a chance to catch Nick Rose, but Virgin has no chance. And then the next thing you know, the West German is passing Nick Rose. And I mean, at the half mile to go, Mark, they're talking about what a great victory this is for Nick Rose. That's how sure it was. And then all of a sudden, just in the last, like 200 meters out, Virgin just puts on the jets and just takes off and just runs by him with 100 meters to go, like he's just standing still and wins that race. It was a really exciting thing to watch. So you can probably, like I said, you can catch it on YouTube. It's pretty cool. Pretty fun to watch. So, yeah, great guy. Won five state titles. Multiple NCAA champion as well. He won cross country. He was in the top 12 in cross country all 4 years that he ran in college at the University of Illinois. He won three Peachtree Road races.
Really?
Yeah. So that's where I think I saw him at Peachtree back when he was winning it. So
I assume it's he was cross country. His specialty was middle distance.
Yeah, he was more the 10K. Yeah. Anything right around that 10K distance, he seemed to thrive at.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great guy too.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, so we're back, and Dean, I made a promise to a guy that I would circle back. I don't really like that term. We've kind of overused that term, haven't we?
That's one of those.
But I promised a guy that we would circle back because I kind of called this guy out, but I really wasn't calling him out. I didn't say his name, but I was using what he did as an example of what we all do sometime. A few weeks back, I was talking about one of my buddies had woke up at 5:30 to do a long track workout, and he hit snooze and said, okay, I'll get it in later that day. And then he realized his day was just back to back to back with meetings.
Yeah.
Well, it was mine and your buddy, Travis Vaughn, who's with Upward, and our coworker now. And so I called Travis, it was a few nights ago, and I called him, and he answered, or I was FaceTiming him, or on Teams, or whatever it is. And he answered, and he was running. And he said, I literally just listened to you talking about me missing my run. And so I told him I would come back and update everybody that Travis, and he posted it, and he sent you and I a message. He did do that workout like at 11 or 11:30 that night, and he crushed it.
Yeah.
Travis's running is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, how far he was injured for quite a while and come back, and he's really doing good. So Travis, I'm letting everybody know that you hit snooze that morning, and you didn't do what a lot of people would do. You didn't mail it in. You got out there at 11 o'clock. I can't remember what time it was. And
no excuses.
And slayed the dragon.
Yep.
So great job.
That's the way to do it right there. Good example. All right. Well, this comes from an article in the New York Times. The stuff that happens in the running world sometimes. The New York Marathon, of course, starts on Staten Island. And it starts by going across the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. If you've ever watched the New York Marathon, you're very familiar with the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. It has two levels, an upper level and a lower level. Mm-hmm. And it's filled with runners on New York City Marathon morning. Well, the MTA, which is the folks that run all the toll bridges and the subway and all that stuff in New York City, has decided that the runners need to be paying a toll for using the bridge.
I heard this on national news the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, they basically want to charge $15 a person for each runner to run across the bridge. Now I'm hoping that it's just a negotiating thing. I think maybe
sound like it was the way they were talking about it on the news.
I think what they were trying to do was they were trying to at least get to the point where the runners had to use just one level instead of both levels, because they do lose some revenue. There are cars that would be going across there, except that, in my opinion, and I saw some back and forth on this. So I don't know what the truth is, but I bet they make up, if not the entire revenue, most of that revenue on the subways, with people running subways back and forth.
Or just the fact that they're bringing tens of thousands of people who are staying in hotels and spending money at restaurants. The tax revenue from that race alone would probably quadruple easily what
For
this
sure.
one department is wanting to get. Yeah, sure. This is just
Well, the good insanity. News is, this. I read all this, and then I found out a little bit later, the good news is that Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, I'll give her some credit, she has basically said to MTA, she's in charge of the whole thing, and she basically said, let them do what they've been doing.
Good for her.
So good for her for standing up.
An iconic race like that. And that race probably makes a lot of money, but $750,000 isn't anything to sneeze at.
No.
That's a lot of money for any big race.
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine what their costs are for a race like that. You know, I mean, how many millions of dollars? Of course, this is the most expensive race on earth. most expensive marathon that you can run, other than, you know, one that includes travel. But the actual entry fee is $255. So it's an expensive race to start with. And you know that if they had to pay this, what they were going to do is they were just going to jack the entry fee up, and all the runners would have been paying. And so I'm glad to see that happen. I remember the subway. Back when I was running the Peachtree Road Race, there were times where I would get on the subway and ride the subway. We'd stay at a hotel near the finish line, and then I'd get on the subway and ride to the starting line. And you had to be careful what subway station you got on the subway, because if you got on too far down the line, I mean, the subway would be completely filled, and the doors would open, and there
couldn't
would
get
be
on.
Yeah, and people couldn't get on. And I mean, it's 12 feet deep of people shoulder to shoulder. And I felt so bad for those people watching those doors open and go, nobody else can get on. But I figured that out early the first time I did it.
So you stay a little bit further away.
Yep. What I do is if you stay near the finish line, there's two subway stations. There's one that's kind of almost past the finish line, and then there's one that's kind of closer to. And if you go to the one that's past the finish line, you're fine. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that I always use.
Yeah.
All right, surrender. It means to submit to authority. And it's typically a negative word, but it can be positive. And Julie Wicker writes this story called I Surrender. Back in 2019, I ran my first half marathon. At the time, my dad was battling stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Miraculously, he was able to attend my race. Just 4 short months later, he died in January of 2020. Not long after my dad's death, the COVID pandemic stopped life as we knew it, and all races would be virtual. Over the next few years, as life started returning to normal and in-person races became a thing again, I was battling a health journey of my own. Around the time my dad was battling pancreatic cancer, I had a pap smear that came back normal but with HPV, the human papillomavirus. For 3 years, I would have pap smears, colposcopies, and procedures on my cervix. Eventually, I would develop cervical precancer, and in January of 2022, I had part of my cervix removed. I healed in time to complete my first marathon in March of 2022. Although I missed a few training runs, I was determined to join the global 0.01% who run a marathon. I finished, but not as well as I hoped. I have had to give myself grace and be reminded that time doesn't always matter. Rather, it is about the process and finishing. Take a moment to think about how many Run for God Run Club members are of that global 0.01% that run a marathon. Now give yourself a pat on the back. With God's help, we did that. Unfortunately, my first surgery failed and my precancer had gotten worse. I now had carcinoma in situ, which is grade 0 to invasive cancer. Although it could take years for me to develop invasive cancer, it was highly suggested by a God-given surgeon to have a hysterectomy. In November of 2022, I had the surgery. This time, I was down for several months. My comeback race was a 12K. Although I struggled through it, I managed to place in my age group. At my one-year post-operative checkup, I was blessed to receive the news that I was finally free of the human papillomavirus and cervical precancer. God is good. For the first time since 2019, my hometown is offering the half marathon at the Bridge to Bridge Georgetown, South Carolina, the little town nestled between Charleston and Myrtle Beach. I wrestled with the decision, should I run the 12K again and try to PR or register for the half marathon? Physically, I felt I could go for the half, but mentally, I wasn't sure. One day, as I was running a 10-miler, I realized what was holding me back mentally. The half marathon would be the same exact race I ran in 2019 with my dad at the finish line, except this time he would not be there. Since then, no race has ever compared to the natural race high I was blessed to experience that day with my dad. Could I mentally get through it? Could I get past these thoughts that consumed me? I heard God speak to me. He reminded me that with Dad as my heavenly angel, he would not physically be with me at the finish line, but with me every step of the race to cheer me on. That night, I came home and registered for the 2024 Georgetown Bridge to Bridge 13.1. At that moment, I surrendered my thoughts that had been consuming me over to God, the authority of my story, a story that I am 60,000 words into writing a book that may never be published, all in God's will and His timing. So to be continued for a podcast another day, I leave you with my favorite promise, Philippians 4:13. I can do all this through Him who gives me strength. And what I consider my life verse, Philippians 1:6, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus.
It's great to hear this follow-up from Julie. I remember, and I'm trying to remember if we did her story on this podcast or if I just remember reading her story. I vividly remember the picture of her and her dad at the finish line.
Yeah.
He was sitting down. She was standing up. I don't know why I can remember that so well. But it's great to, I love to hear follow-up stories on things we've talked about before. And so great story, Julie.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the positivity in the face of negativity,
sure.
Right?
There's
this pressure on her to think a certain way. And she realizes that she doesn't have to do that. The other thing too, she's talking about a book in here. She needs to go ahead and do that. Get that finished.
Sure.
We'll figure out how to get it done. Shoot.
Yeah.
We'll do something. I don't know how we can do it, but we'll do something. Shoot. I shared with you, I came up with this idea for a book that I'm trying to figure out how to do it. And I don't want to say what it is, but it's something nobody's ever done before. So I think it would be interesting.
Leave it to Dean to do something nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's a good idea, though.
Yeah.
I like the idea.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how many people are held back from doing something because they're afraid of how it's going to make them feel. You know, she was afraid of how this was going to make her feel to do that. So I wonder how many people, I mean, it happens. We hear it all the time, right? We hear people that they don't want to do something because of how they think it's going to make them feel.
Yeah, I think worried about how it's going to make you feel is an unknown. And to me, unknowns, the possibility of a negative unknown is worse than the reality of a negative feeling that is known.
Most of
the unknown is the worst. You know, it's kind of like you hear people, they get, I've heard Dave Ramsey talk about this before, how people, they get a cancer diagnosis. And the worst part is not the cancer diagnosis, and it's not what they have to go through in treatments and all that. The worst part is the 3 weeks between you get that cancer diagnosis and you find out what the plan is. You know, usually you'll get a diagnosis, you have cancer, come back, we're doing some scans, and we're going to have a plan of action. It's usually the unknown time frame that's the worst.
Yeah.
So, you know, he always says facts are your friends. And so, yeah, I think a lot of times we kind of psych ourselves out by things that we don't even really know. And if it does turn out bad, it's usually not near as bad as what we've made it up in our head to be.
Most of the time, yeah. Yep, that's true. That's true. We worry an awful lot. From a running standpoint, I think about how I think this holds a lot of people back. There's a lot of people worried about how much it's going to hurt to run really hard. And so they don't ever go there because they're convinced they're just going to pass out if I run any harder. And the truth is there's probably a lot more there sometimes. And I don't know, that's kind
of. But truth be known, the reality of where they're at is worse.
Yeah.
Than what they're afraid of might happen.
Absolutely.
To get to where they want to be.
Yep.
They go home and they're ashamed of where they are, maybe physically or, you know, weight or whatever it is. But they're scared of what it's going to take to get to where they want to be. And that can be debilitating.
Yeah.
I get it. Well, I'm not saying there's an easy fix to it. The easy fix is just charge ahead.
Yep. Yep. 100%. Philippians 4:13, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. She follows it up and says, we must not let our own strength get in the way of what we can accomplish through God's help.
Hmm. Yeah, we put God in that box.
We do.
We base what God can do based on what we can do.
Yeah.
And it's the whole pancake and waffle thing. We confine him to this box of what we think rather than just let the grace of God pour all over us and do things in his strength.
Yeah. Well, and we often misapply this verse.
Sure.
But boy, this is dead on. This is a good application of it here, you know, and what she's talking about, right? I looked at this, you know, every time I see these things, you know, I see them a little different. We all do, right? And I looked at the word gives this time. God gives us strength. Mm-hmm. In other words, God doesn't force us to do anything. God doesn't do it for us.
Sure.
God gives us the strength to carry these things out. And then we have the choice. Do we want to use what God's given us or do we not want to use what God's given us? And I never really looked at this verse quite that way, but I thought that was, we've got to make the decision to use what God gives us.
It's a good perspective.
Philippians 1:6, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. Life is a marathon. He is always working in us, writing our stories, never give up.
You know, this is one of those verses that it really comes down to, do you believe it? Yeah. You know, so many times we say we believe what Scripture says. We say we believe that we believe in what Philippians 1:6 says, but our actions don't match what we're saying. You know, being confident in this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. But our actions show that we don't believe that. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do things in our own power. We're trying to force things to happen. And you know, I think anytime we get to that realm of depression, or we're getting down on ourselves, it's revealing that we really don't believe this. Because if we believe what the word says, then there's no need to get in those places. And I know I'm probably oversimplifying that.
Well, I don't know that you are. But, I mean, I think that's the whole idea of the gospel is it's simple and we overcomplicate it, right?
Right. But it, I mean, I know it's not simple when you get into those places.
It's not easy.
It's not easy. But the answer is simple.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. I looked at this from a... I think this is how you know you're in tune with God, right? I think you know you're in tune with God when you can look back and you realize you've been making steady progress.
Sure.
Now, it's like anything else. If you look at a, you know, at a graph, and that graph has a steady upward trajectory, then you got points above and below that steady trajectory. There's some good days where, you know, maybe you heard a great sermon, you were really pumped up that day, and you wanted to do everything you could, you know, to follow God's will that day. And then, you know, the next day you had some setback, something happened, you got mad or, you know, whatever. But overall, over time, you're getting better.
It's funny you say that. I was just the other day, I've got the little icon on my home screen on my phone that's the Dow Jones. And so I clicked on it the other day, and I was looking back since, I think it was 1950 or whatever. But I started to click on periods of time, and like from 2020 to now, gosh, I mean, the stock market's just been all over the board. I mean, especially the past 6 months, it's just... and it's like it's got Tourette's or something. I don't know. It's crazy. And you really start thinking back, and it feels like it's always been like that. It's just up and down and up and down. But when you pull up the graph from 1950 to today, it looks like a straight line.
It's pretty steady, huh?
It is. It's pretty straight. I mean, you can see the big miles, 9/11. You can see COVID. You can see the... 06,
yeah.
You know, you can see those times, and that's a picture of our life, really. I mean, our walk with Christ is going to look like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you zoom in, you're going to see, gosh, where we just made the boneheaded moves. But if you back out, the goal is to see that steady straight line.
Yeah.
But we get hung up on that close-up view a lot of times, and we really get down on ourselves, and we say, you know, we've messed up. There's no way we can recover from this. Well, you know, I'm sure when the stock market crashed in 07, whenever that was, and when COVID, there were people saying, we'll never recover from this.
Yeah.
But time always heals.
I remember back, I know this is a little before your time, but back in 1988, when the stock market dropped, you know, somebody, and I had a class where we actually, we did some mock financial stuff in this class. And I remember how crazy that was. You're right. Over time, we should be getting better.
But just like with the people who have the right perspective on dips in the stock market, they look at that as opportunity.
Yep.
They look at it as a place to grow, a place to learn. Well, we can do that. I mean, we're going to make mistakes in our walk with Christ. The question is, what do we do with those mistakes? Are we learning from them? Are we capitalizing on those mistakes to say, you know, God, I see what you're trying to show me here, and we get better as a result of it, or do we let it crush us?
Yeah.
You know, I keep bringing up Dave Ramsey, but Dave Ramsey says the only person that gets hurt on a roller coaster is those that jump off in the middle of the ride. You know, how many of us, we make a mistake and we're like, that's it. You know, I've messed up.
Yeah.
Instead of buckling down, holding on and learning something and seeing what God's trying to show us in those valleys.
Yeah. Well, who are the best athletes too, right? The best athletes are the ones who, when the chips are down and things are bad, they figure out a way to get better. Even though I've seen athletes, the best athletes, when they're hurt and they can't run, then they're doing some strength work in the gym. They're getting in the pool and they're swimming. They're doing something to try to, you know, even when things are bad, they're doing something to try to.
There are, obviously there's anomalies out there. But I'm going to go out and say the vast majority, 99% of anybody that makes it to the top of anything, if you start zooming in on periods of time, it was never a straight line.
You're right.
It had huge valleys, and they learned from those valleys, and that's what got them to the top. And there's, I mean, there's so many sermons in just those statements, but it's all a perspective when we get in those valleys.
Yep. 1 Peter 5:7, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. She says, God desires a relationship with us and is always ready for us to surrender to him. Of course, you know, if you go back and the whole thing says, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you, be submissive to one another and be clothed in humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. I could, you know where my mind went on this was, have you ever just unloaded on somebody?
Unfortunately.
We've all done it, right? Yeah. We've all done it. And very often we do it, and as soon as we do it, we regret it.
Yeah.
But being humble means not going there, right? Mm-hmm. Being humble means... I was trying to think, what do I do that's not humble? Because I feel like a lot of the things I do, I feel like I am humble in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways that I'm not too.
Sure.
And that's one of those ways where, man, if I don't like something, I get a little too vocal and I say a little too much. And that's not being humble.
Yeah.
And we should be humble.
But there's a balance there. There's meekness, there's humbleness, but there's also standing up for what's right. I don't know if we talked about this on here, but we just built a house, and I was talking to, I think it was the painter one day, and I always try to, I'm not proselytizing, but I'm always bringing things back to scripture, and this painter was talking about the state of our society and everything, and talking about a few of the hot button topics, and I think I made the comment, something to the effect, well, what are you going to do about it? And he said, I'm just, it's none of my business what other people do. And so I just tend to walk around and keep my mouth shut. And I get the sentiment.
Yeah.
But that's what's got us where we're at.
That's right.
So, righteous indignation.
Sure.
Is being humble, but yet standing for what is right in the eyes of God.
Sure.
And the reason we've gotten to where we are in so many areas, and we're not going to go into them, but the reason we have gotten here is because as believers, I feel like we've taken the stance of that painter. It's none of my business. I'm just going to sit back. Well, the opposing side, the devil, talk about taking advantage of opportunity that we just talked about.
Yeah.
He's taken full advantage of that.
Yeah.
And it's a balance, and it's got to be led by the Spirit. But I think so many times we're being led by the Spirit and we're saying, hey, it's none of our business.
Yeah.
And
I think you're
there
right.
There are things that we have to start standing up for in a godly way.
That's right. That's
a lot
the
of
key.
Times you and I are very much wired to say, we start the conversation with, I think, well, that's the wrong way to start.
Yeah.
But if the Spirit's leading you to say something, do something, take a stand for something, by all means, it's disobedient if we don't.
Yeah.
And I think as a country, we're being disobedient in a lot of ways by being what we portray as humble.
Yeah.
It's not humble. It's disobedient.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's a mouthful. And it's so true. And I'm so guilty of it. There's very often when I stand up for something that I know I'm right in what I'm standing up for. And I know it's biblical what I'm standing up for. Right. And yet the way that I do it is not humble.
Sure.
And yeah, that's really, really important.
You can take a stand and be humble at the same time.
But
usually
It's hard, though. It's hard.
It's really hard. It's got to be spirit-led. But yeah, most of the time, it's Mitchell-led.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I'm familiar with it. A question. What story is God writing in you? You know, I thought about this. You know, I write this, the Dean's Thoughts, every week. And it's one of the things I love to do almost as much as anything else I do. Mm-hmm. I love that. And it's fun. And some days, man, there are days I could probably write three in a day because these ideas, they just come out of my brain and it's so easy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I start on it and it's like 30 minutes later, I'm done. And I'm like, how in the world did I get that done so fast, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's other days where I can't start the first sentence. And it's the craziest thing. And I think that...
And you write, and you erase, and you write, and you delete, and you write. And some, you know, they say, what story is God writing in you? I feel like a lot of times the story God's writing in me, he's doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
Well, he messed up there. Back it off. You know,
but why is he doing that? Here's the reason why he's doing it. This is where I was going with this, is that I think what happens is, unless we stop enough to let God write enough of our story for us to see and read that story and proceed and do what he wants us to do, we can't get this. He can't write the story. And when we don't do what he wants us to do, then what does he have to do? We have to go back and he has to write a different story. Mm-hmm. And so if we'll follow his story, and then the key, I think, is we have to come back, because he doesn't write the entire story at one time. Mm-hmm. We have to come back to him, be quiet again, and listen for the next part of the story and get it before we proceed. But what we do is, a lot of times, you and I are really, really good at this. We listen to God and we do what he wants us to do, and we get to the end of what he wanted us to do, and we just keep going, right? Because we're doing good things. You know, we're trying to do good things,
right?
But we're not doing what he wants us
to do. Yeah, and we know that what we're talking about here is probably not theologically sound. I mean, God's outside of time, space. Yeah. He knows the beginning, the end, but... Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's we're the ones causing all that havoc.
That's right.
There's no havoc going on in heaven.
That's right.
God's just like sometimes looking at me and my story, and he's just like, okay, here we go.
Thank you for clarifying my thoughts. That's exactly right.
We're getting the head shake, you know, just like we are with our kids sometimes. It's like, all right, we're just going to let him hang himself on this one.
Yeah.
Because that's the best way to learn.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yep. Good stuff. Another question. What is holding you back? Well, I think we just covered that, didn't
we?
Yeah. Too hard-headed?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the biggest thing sometimes is that we're so busy. We are so stinking busy, and we have so much going on that we just don't take the time to let him write that story. Mm-hmm. And we have to take the time to let him write the story. And because when we're charging in a different direction, then he has to create a different... our perfect story is awesome and incredible. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we muddy it up by messing up the story and not following the script. And then God has to go, okay, you got off track over here. Now I've got to write this different story to get you back on track. And then there's a waste of time to get back on track, right? Sure.
We're our own worst enemy.
Boy, we are. Sure. Yeah, no, man. Last question. Is there something you need to surrender over to God?
Man, Julie's just stepping on toes now.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, there's many things. And I think the hardest one that I work on, and you just mentioned it, is our schedules.
Yeah.
You know, we have this thought that it's our schedule. It's our money.
Mm-hmm.
It's out. It's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's God's. We're stewarding. If we can ever get our head around that, it's not my money. We're just managing it for God. It's not my time. I'm just managing God's schedule and living out God's schedule. It can radically change the way you think about things.
Yeah.
God doesn't want your schedule packed from daylight to dark, especially when there's not a line item in there or several line items in there to have his name on them.
Yeah.
Problem is, we pack our schedules and no line. It's a meeting here and a meeting there and a class here and a teaching this here and going to church here. I mean, it can be full of good things.
Yeah.
But how many line items do we have on your Google Calendar that says God?
Yep. Nope. My problem is I'm a do-it-yourselfer. You're way better at this than I am. You're so good
much better.
But you're pretty good about you realize when you probably should get somebody else involved in to do something that's a bigger project.
Sometimes.
I know we're all that way. Yeah. But I'm terrible about it. It took all I could do to pay somebody to put some steps on my deck at the house. I mean, it was all I could do just to even think about having somebody else come out and do that. It's just like, I should be able to do that. And I think because of that, because that's the way I'm wired. And I think I'm wired that way because my dad was that way. Mm-hmm. My dad just basically thought he could do anything, and he could, and he did. And so I think, but the problem is, the two go together. What you're talking about with time mm-hmm. and being a do-it-yourselfer, they go together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just don't have the time, and you need to recognize that. And that gets in my way so much of trying to let God have his way with me is because I want to do things myself mm-hmm. because that's the way I'm wired. And so giving up that control of what I'm going to do and taking that time to be still and to listen to him and to follow his direction. It's really, really hard for me.
Yeah. Just because we can doesn't always mean we should. Going all the way back to the beginning of this podcast, where we talked about running.
You know,
it's just like we finished our house. We've now moved into our house. And I made the decision when we were pricing cabinets for the house that I was going to take care of doing the pantry. I know how to build cabinets. I can build cabinets. I can build a very nice set of cabinets to go, and it's in the pantry. Nobody's going to see it if I do mess up. But guess what's in the pantry right now? Wooden shelves that we just bought from Home Depot because you didn't have don't have time to build the cabinets right now. So,
yep.
And it's a very good possibility that sitting at this podcast 1 year from now, that it may still be wood shelves. Probably not. I hope not. But that's just one of those examples of, I probably should have just let the cabinet people go ahead and do that, but I can do that, Dean.
Yeah, right.
Just like you can fix your lawnmower, but you needed to throw it away 10 years ago and go buy a new one.
Well, I had to fix it again last week. I hadn't brought that up. Now, don't go there.
Somebody mentioned it the other day. They said, man, Dean loves working on his lawnmower, don't he?
Not on purpose. It's out of necessity.
You get a lot of good content from that lawnmower, though.
I do. Well, you know what happened was I had I did something. I think I've told this story before, but you know I had a lawnmower, and it was a brand. I had bought it new, and after like 4 years or something, I let it run out of oil. I don't know how in the world I did it, but I did, and the engine locked down. And I decided at that point in time I didn't deserve a new lawnmower. Like, I was punishing myself.
Yeah.
I do not deserve a new lawnmower. And so I was only going to buy a used lawnmower. And so I did. That's the one I still have because I haven't bought a new lawnmower.
Well, you said you hadn't talked about your lawnmower in a while. You know why? Because it's been winter.
Well, that's true, too.
You're going to be talking about it here in the coming months.
Well, I just had a major problem with it. The first time I got it out to try to cut the grass, I couldn't cut the grass. So, yeah, I had to push mow my grass. And listen, you think my riding lawnmower is bad? That's the one I normally talk about. Oh, the push mower, way worse. This lawnmower is, the wheels are sideways on it like this because the lawnmower was the cheapest lawnmower you could buy. It is, Debbie bought it in the mid-90s. It starts on the first pull every time, still to this day. But man, that thing is completely worn out. You can't. Debbie said, I'll take over and do some of this. And I'm like, you don't understand how hard this is to push this thing. It's really hard. Anyway, it's
the
all
Chronicles
good.
Chronicles of Dean's Lawnmower.
It's all good.
Upward Sports Run for God Run Club is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness journey and your faith journey. You get these weekly podcasts, but there is so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there, too. If you're not a member, join today at runforgod.com. It is the best value you will find.
All right, we're back, and Russ Cook did it. You remember us talking about Russ Cook? We talked about him a few months ago. He was the guy who was going to run the full length of Africa. Yeah. He started the very southern point. He was running to the very northern point. And when we left him, he had visa problems trying to get into Algeria, I think it was. And he posted on social media, and apparently the military police of Great Britain, which is where he's from, came through, got him the visa he needed, and he completed this over 10,000 mile run, 352 days, and it's an incredible thing. He finished on the beaches of Tunisia after starting at the southernmost tip of South Africa. So, pretty impressive thing. Here's a little bit, some highlights from his trip. On day one, he ticked off 50.6 kilometers, more than 30 miles, after setting off from the coastal South African village of Lagolas, which marks Africa's most southern tip. From there, he would follow Africa's west coast through, listen to this, these are the countries he went through: Namibia, Angola, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Republic of Congo, Cameroon, Nigeria, Benin, Togo, Ghana, Ivory Coast, Guinea, Senegal, Mauritania, and Algeria, and he finished in Tunisia. So, isn't that amazing?
Some of those just don't seem like very safe places. Of course, I'm reading your day 64 there, and that confirms that.
Yep. On day 64, he was robbed at gunpoint in Angola. He lost his cell phone, money, and several things. And then the police decided to give him an escort the rest of the way through Angola. So that was a rough time.
That was nice of him.
Yeah. Day 167, he had food poisoning. And then around day 200, he got the flu. So he also had the flu for a little while, and he kept going. Day 205, he had a back problem that caused him to, he took 48 hours off at day 205 because he had to get some x-rays because he was afraid there was something bad wrong. Well, just like a normal ultra athlete, he got the x-rays, found out there's nothing structurally wrong, and went right back to business. And then day 278, that's when the visa problem happened. Imagine going 278 days of running, I don't know, 50 miles a day or whatever it is, and then finding out you have a problem and maybe not being able to finish. Fortunately, he was able to finish. Day 304, he ran out of road. On day 304, he had to start running across the Sahara Desert.
Wow.
And as he ran across the Sahara Desert, there were times there were sandstorms. And during these sandstorms, he had to put on swimming goggles to protect his face and had to put a folded-up T-shirt around his mouth just to protect himself. And then there were also snowstorms while he was in the desert as well. So rough time through there. And then on day 352, the finish line after 44K run on day 352 at the beach in Tunisia. Hmm. And there's some questions about whether or not he's the first, because they're apparently after he did it. Now, nobody brought this up while he's doing this. Okay, you got a guy who's running 10,000 miles. He's got this big, huge thing planned. He's advertising it as if he's the first person to ever do it. And then after he gets through, he's got a few people coming up and going, whoa, a couple people have already done it. Well, it turns out the couple people that did it went from like somewhere in South Africa to Cairo, Egypt. It's a lot shorter trip. Mm-hmm. It is the length of Africa, but not the southernmost tip to the northernmost tip. So his was longer, more impressive. His was also shorter. He did it in a shorter period of time. So it is, I think, a really amazing feat, no matter how you look at it. And
for sure.
Yeah, pretty cool thing. He goes by the handle Hardest Geezer. I really want to know where that came from, because he's not old. You know, a guy with that name, you'd think he was old. He's not.
That reminds me. I went into a – I have a tractor. You have lawnmower problems. I have tractor problems. Tractor started leaking diesel fuel. Anyway, there's a tractor mechanic here in town, and his name is Barney Presley. He wears half of a hat. So when he puts his hat on, he's got this part, but he cuts off the back. He don't like the way. And if you ever go by the Kangaroo right there in Varnell late at night, you know the panel truck that has the chocolate lab in it?
Yeah.
Do you know the truck I'm talking about? That's Barney. So he's always at the Kangaroo drinking coffee on a 5-gallon bucket. Anyway, so he sent this injector pump to a place in, I'm getting way off subject, to a place in Chattanooga. And I had to go pick it up here. So he called me and said, pump's ready. Go up there and pick it up. So I walked in. I said, I'm here to pick up a pump that Barney Pressley left up here. And the lady looked at me. She said, empty pockets. And I'm like, do what? She said, empty pockets. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. She said, that's Barney's company name. His empty pockets. I don't know. That made me think of Barney.
That's funny. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts. And that's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, salesmen are good at making you change your mind, or at least the way you think about things. This one's called Think Past the Sale. The art of persuasion has been around as long as people have been able to communicate. Some people are good at it. Some are, let's just say, not inclined to use it very often. There are persuaders who use a positive vision for a future as their hook, while there are others who take the opposite approach, warning us of the terrible things to come. Interestingly, I think we all believe we are more persuadable with positive words than negative words, but I would caution you on that thought. After all, how positive was the last political ad you saw? Quick, name the politician who gained enough votes to be elected who didn't use any negative ads in their campaign. Right, I can't name him or her either. Of course, the people who practice persuasion more than anyone, with the possible exception of the aforementioned politicians, are salespeople. It is quite literally how they make their living, and they use a little trick that is super effective. If you talk with a car salesperson, for example, after they have told you about all the features of the car they are attempting to sell you, their goal is to get you to picture yourself in the car. If it is a car with good gas mileage, they won't just tell you about the great gas mileage. They'll try to get you to picture yourself driving past the gas station. They won't just tell you it has heated seats. They will move your mind to a freezing cold day where you're sitting comfortably in your new car while everyone around is shivering. What they're doing is trying to get you to think past the sale. In other words, they're trying to condition your brain not to think, do I want to buy this car, but what am I going to do with the car after I have purchased it? Thinking past the sale is a very effective tool, and it can be used on anything. If we go back to politics, think about the last ad you saw. It probably compared and contrasted what the world would look like if you elected the opponent versus them, right? That's thinking past the sale, or the vote in this case. We can use this very effective tool with our running or walking too. I don't ask myself if I am going to run today. I ask, when am I going to run today? I'm thinking past the sale. When you picture yourself 30 pounds lighter from all the miles you've logged, you're thinking past the sale. Thinking about feeling more energized? Thinking past the sale. Visualization is thinking past the sale. In the same way, thinking about what will happen if you gain another 30 pounds can also be effective for some people. You can use it in a positive way or a negative way. I like to use positive thoughts, but sometimes my brain needs a kick in the pants too, so I'll switch to the negative motivation, whatever it takes, right? So stop asking yourself if you can do it, whatever it is. Start thinking about what it will look like when you do that thing you want to do. Start thinking past the sale. There have been millions of hours of research to find the best ways to sell products and services, and they all conclude that making a prospective buyer think past the sale is a good idea. Take all that research and put it to good use by convincing your prospective buyer, your brain, to think past the sale. You know who must have been good at making someone think past the sale? The serpent in the garden convinced Eve to do something God had asked her not to do. Then she persuaded her husband to do the same thing. We can be persuaded to pursue good or bad. The serpent made Eve think past the sale by telling her that she would be like God. She found out the hard way that wasn't true. But there is another way to think past the sale spiritually. Imagine heaven. When you do, you're thinking past the sale. It's not if I follow God's plan for my life. It's what happens when I follow God's plan. And if you infuse that persuasion by spending time reading your Bible and praying to the greatest persuader of them all. If you have ever shopped for cars, maybe you have gone from one dealership to another, perhaps even right across the street from each other, and you are left with a choice. Which salesperson am I going to listen to? Which one has persuaded you that they have the best deal or the best car? And we have a choice spiritually too. Are we going to listen to the evil one, who we know is the father of lies, or are we going to listen to the one who is looking out for our good? The choice is ours today.
That's a great story. I was sitting here thinking, I was trying to decide if the hymn, I was thinking about an old gospel hymn. And I think it uses the word decided, but I was thinking it said persuaded. I have decided to follow Jesus.
That one says decided.
But isn't there one that says I am persuaded to follow Jesus?
There is. I can't remember the what which.
I can't. I had hymns ringing around in my head the whole time you were reading this.
Yep, that is true.
By the way, we went and saw Gold City and the Inspirations the other night. I sent you a text about this while I was at the concert. Yeah. Gold City Inspirations, if you don't know who they are, two greatest Southern gospel groups there are. And a lady named Karen Peck, who is also there, she was singing a song about dancing for Jesus. And it was literally the day after you and I did the podcast where you were talking. Was it your story was talking about?
It was Jerry's story.
Jerry's story, yeah. Dance. How about dancing?
Yeah.
And
that's funny.
Anyway, I was chasing another rabbit there, Dean.
Good timing. What are your thoughts on salespeople? I mean, they have such terrible things said about them, right? Especially car salesmen.
Yeah, I mean, certain salespeople. A lot of people say I'm good at persuasion. I don't think I'm good at persuasion. I think I just like to talk about things I'm passionate about. And if I think it's a good idea, then I'm going to try to get you to do it. Sales, I was in the real estate business at one time. My problem always was if I didn't like the house, I wasn't a very good salesperson.
Yeah.
You know, if we went in this house, I wasn't going to talk about how great it was because I really didn't think that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be pointing out all the bad things and they'd be like, well, we're not buying this house. Oh, okay. Let's go to the next one. So I don't think I'm a salesperson. I think I'm just passionate about what I'm passionate about and I want others to be passionate about the same team.
Yeah.
Same thing. Now, sometimes people aren't, and that poses a problem, and it creates a challenge for me because I want to try to get them to where I am, and I think that's our charge with the gospel. You know, it's not that we're selling the gospel, but if you're passionate about it, you want to persuade other people to be passionate about it,
and it'll come through. It'll come through when you're passionate about it.
If it's fake or not, if it's real or fake, that comes through.
Yep,
car salesman many times. Or a realtor who really don't like the house, but they're trying to sell you on it, you can see that.
You can tell it. Yeah, for sure. Well, have you ever heard of the Pygmalion effect?
No.
Well, it's a Greek myth. Pygmalion is a story of a guy who he creates a statue and it's beautiful and he loves the statue so much that it comes to life. And of course, the idea is that when we really yearn for things, we really want things, when we're really passionate about things, that those things tend to come true. Right? It's about expectations, I guess. And I was fascinated by this when I saw this as an HR manager in the corporate world. I saw this all the time. I saw people, you could tell their background by the way they talked because there was an expectation from some people expected way more than they deserved to expect. Because that's
welcome
the way
to 2024.
They were 24. That's the way they were brought up to believe things. Sure. And then there were other people who were really. I mean, the truth of the corporate world is
I don't really deserve a raise.
Yeah. Well, there are people in the corporate world. I'm telling you, who are you got a machine operator over here that could do so much more, but they're just fine where they are and they're happy where they are and they believe that's where they should be. And you got this other person over here who's a nincompoop. There's that word again. And, you know, they're in a management position and they don't have a clue what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the truth is the only difference between those two people is that that one person just believed he should be there, mm-hmm. and he's there. And I think there's a lot of strength to this. There's a lot of truth to when you believe where you should be. I think it happens in running. You know, I think the best runners, I've said this before, as a 58-year-old masters runner, I feel like when I compare myself to my competition, people in my same age group, I'm getting better and better as the years go on. You're not supposed to do that, but I am. And I'm completely convinced it's because I just refuse to think I'm going to slow down. Now, I know I am slowing down, but I refuse to accept it. You know what I mean?
Then he's like, la, 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 la.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the quote that we say on here all the time. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right.
That's right. That's right.
And it's, yeah, it's, I don't like the power of positive thinking. I don't even like that phrase, but.
But there's something to it.
There is. Not to the effect of what that book probably says, but yeah, if you think you can't, it's probably not going to happen.
Yep.
And that goes. If you think you can, there's a good chance. It's not that it's going to happen.
Right.
Your chances are much better that it will happen.
For sure. Yeah, the opposite effect is called the Gollum effect. That's a Jewish myth, and it's the opposite of the Pygmalion effect. So if you think you're not going to succeed, then you're probably not going to succeed. So that's called the Gollum effect. I never heard that before, but I thought it was interesting. And I've seen that too. I've seen people who, gosh, they could be so much better. I've especially seen it in athletes. I've seen athletes who have just a ton of ability and promise, and they just won't connect the dots. And it, either they don't believe it or they just don't want to work hard enough to do it. But either way, it's still the same thing. It's a satisfaction with less, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times with young athletes, it's a confident. We see it in them. I had this conversation with Landon just a few nights ago. There's a guy who's a little bit faster than him, and I asked. I mean, I know that. I mean, he runs with this guy all the time. I know that he could probably hook onto him in the mile and go with him. And I told Landon the other night. I said, you know, do you think you could go with him? And he said, probably. And I said, well, why haven't you done it? Why? And he just. I think it's confidence.
Yeah.
You know, he's afraid of failing.
Yep.
But sometimes there's nothing better than failing.
Yep.
To know where you're at, you know, because I really feel Landon in his running right now. He don't really know where he's at because he's not went to that deep well of the possibility of failure.
And it goes back to what we were talking about before. It's risky to try it.
Sure.
And so we don't want to take the risk to try it. And man, like you said earlier, to me, it's worse not knowing what would happen and having never tried it than it is to try it. And even if you failed miserably, at least you know.
Yeah, I'm not scared of failure.
No.
To my fault, to a fault,
you and me
I'm
both.
Not scared of failure, whether it's being 30 years old and going and buying a dirt bike, which I did, which I shouldn't have. That was an ultimate fail. or it's taking a risk with whatever. I'm not scared of. Now, that can be reckless.
Yeah.
But I think we all need to have, especially when it comes to the things of God. We need to, because God is constantly asking us to take a risk. That's what stepping outside your comfort zone is.
Yep.
But as Joshua 1:9 tells us, every time we step out of our comfort zone for the glory of Christ, he'll be there with us.
That's right. That's right. And the question is, who are we going to listen to when it comes to this? Are we going to listen to God or Satan? Because they're both in our ears. And the truth is that Satan's a lot louder than God is. You know, God's back here. He's calm and he's collected and he's like, this is the way. Mm-hmm. If you, I'm not going to force you to follow me, but I want you to. I'm not going to force you to, while Satan is over here telling lies and telling us all these filling our head full of a bunch of garbage. And we have to tune that out. You have to purposefully tune it out, because if you don't, you're gonna be like that person who listened to that salesperson who sold this car that was this great thing, and then they got it home and realized, oh, this isn't nearly what I thought it was.
It kind of makes me think. I mean, look back at some of the. We're not going to go into any names, but think back on some of the greatest politicians, the ones that really are held up in high esteem. They were pretty meek people.
That's true.
They weren't the ones that were yelling and screaming, the world's going to end. You're horrible if you go to the other side.
Yep.
They were pretty meek and level-headed, and they came there to do a job, and they were going to do a job. While, you know, you have these huge followings over some of these loud, just, but that doesn't always indicate who you should follow.
Yeah, I get the feeling we understand wisdom when we see it, but we don't always follow it. You know what I mean? I think when it comes to politicians, I think we know that dude's wise, but because they don't fit in a mold, or they have a different opinion about this thing or that thing, we don't follow. But we know instinctively that person is a wiser person than the person we wind up. And to me, it goes back to God versus Satan and who you're going to follow.
Well, the fact that they're holding their tongue indicates wisdom.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
It's true.
At Upward Sports and Run for God, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey. But we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. Sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you running and walking tips of the day and finish with a different encouraging quote in each episode. You must be a Run Club member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week, we share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome, and this is the reason for this week. It allows us, if we want to test our absolute limit. Mm-hmm. Kind of what we're just talking about, right?
Never know how far you can go until you go too far.
Yep. You can't really test your limit on a basketball court or a soccer field or a lot of these team sports. Maybe you can, like on a bicycle or swimming or something like that. But running is something that just about everybody can do, and not everybody has access to a bike or to a pool that they can swim in. So it's one of the best ways to test your limits. And I think it's really good for us to test our limits, whether it's, you know, how far we can run, or it's how fast we can run, or it's what mountain can we climb, whatever it might be. I just think it's a good idea to test our limits from time to time. You know, I mean, I've said it before. I've run 100,000 miles in my life, and I've done new things as recently as last month. Mm-hmm. And I think we should always be trying to push those boundaries. You know, at some point in time, I can't push those boundaries anymore. But I'll find something. Mm-hmm. I'm going to find some way to push the boundaries.
There's a lot of value, and as you mentioned, running is one of the easier places to do this. Not that it's easy, but it's an easier place to do it. But there's a lot of value in doing something that just scares the living daylights out of you. Mm-hmm. That you say, there is no way. I'll never forget the time I signed up to do a 100-miler. I didn't make it. I made it to 50. My knees had other things, but there was so much satisfaction in just completing that. I didn't even finish the whole thing. But I gave it everything I had. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I've done other things. You know, you and I, we're kind of the same in that we like doing, even though I haven't done anything in a while, that just, this is going to hurt.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Whether it's running in the snow, running in the rain, doing something that you didn't think there's a lot of value. You learn a lot about yourself when you do that.
Yeah, absolutely do. Yep. Well, we talked about World Cross Country last week, and interestingly, Jacob Kiplimo, the guy who won last week, he was in a car accident this past week. He's okay, and cool thing, he gave God all the credit for protecting him. He's Ugandan. Ugandan is 84% Christian. So, you know, Kenya is a little bit higher than that. And, you know, I always thought Kenya was the highest country for Christianity because it's like 92, 93% or something like that. And so I thought,
really? I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't know that. And so that's, I always assumed that. Well, I went and I started looking it up and I found out there is a country where their percentage of Christians is 100%. And of course, when you think about that, you think, no, there's no way. And then, but then when you hear where it is, you're like, oh, okay. It's the Vatican City. So Vatican City, 100% Christian. And then there's another place where it's 100%. And apparently the Pitcairn Islands, it's a place in the Pacific Ocean. And 100% of them are Seventh-day Adventists. There are only 50 people on the island. And I just thought that was interesting. That's our geography lesson for this week. Well, Hillary Bohr broke the American record for 10 miles this past week at the Cherry Blossom 10-miler in Washington. He ran 45:56, which is impressive, and it's awesome, and that's great for Hillary Bohr. But you know what I'm most impressed about after seeing that? You remember when Athanas Kiyoko was here in Varnell, right down the road from here? Like, I mean...
Oh, yeah, I do remember this, yeah.
I mean, he ran like, what?
Literally 2 miles from here.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he set the course record for the Varnell, or the Carpet Capital 10-miler, ran 46:10. That's not far off of 45:56. 14 seconds off of 40. And the course here, way tougher than the Cherry Blossom course. I think that's just, it just tells you how fast that was when he ran that here. That's incredible. So I don't know that course record will ever be beaten. Of course, the previous record had stood since the 80s, and I had always thought it wouldn't be beaten because it was pretty fast too. But wow, that's impressive. And then finally, you know, the high schools have gotten so fast. In Arcadia, they have this track meet where all the best high school runners go every year to run the 3,200 meters and the mile. And this year, they had 7 guys under 8:40 for the 3,200 meters. That's incredible. And then they had, I thought I had seen there were 37 under 9 minutes, but I also read somewhere else there are 59 that were under 9 minutes. 59 Golly. High schoolers under 9 minutes. I mean, when I was in high school, I was pretty good. And when I was in high school, if you ran under 9 minutes, like you're one of the top 2 or 3 in the country. Now you're like 60th. And then, of course, Sadie Englehart, who's been tearing it up, she ran the second fastest mile of all time. She ran a 4:34 mile. That's impressive. Yeah, impressive. I don't know what it is, but since COVID, high school running has just become better than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. I mean, and of course you have Super Shoes coming on at the same time. So I don't know how much of it is what, but something has changed in the mind or equipment wise for sure. Yeah. Well, how about a trivia question for this week? So last week we asked about the only American to win the cross country championships. Well, this week, since we hit the men last week, how about the women? Who is the American who won 3 times in a row on the women's side?
Talking about the World Cross Country
Championships. World Cross Country Championships. Yep. Who is that? Send that to dean@runforgod.com. And if you're a member of Run Club, you will win, and you're the first one to answer, you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. So free money.
Free money.
That's right. So, who is the woman who did that? Another name that you may not know until you look it up. So, fascinating lady.
All right. If you're out there, 2 things. One, you've got a story. Submit your story.
Please.
Dean needs stories. Number 2, send us a message and let us know if you like the change in sound. I'm really curious to know.
Yeah.
So shoot us a message and always tag us. like the podcast, give us ratings and reviews. There's no question that those algorithms, I have no idea how they work, but they work. So the more you do with this podcast, sharing, commenting, reviewing, it ups our place in the algorithm world, gets it in front of more people. And that's the goal here. You know, this podcast is free, so this is how you can help us out.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, and thanks to those people who watch online, too. We have a video version of this podcast. Sure. A lot of you, most of you listen to it. But we have a bunch of people that watch it every week. I don't know why.
I don't either.
But
because we have a face for radio,
yeah,
for
sure. Yeah. But thank you anyway. How about a motivational thought of this week? This comes from Truman Capote. He said, "Failure is the condiment that gives success its flavor." That's pretty good, isn't it? That is one of the best quotes, and I never heard it before. I loved it. If at first you don't succeed, try again. That's what we used to say, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Man. All right. Well, that's it for 213. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.